Everyone, my name is Michelle Zeman, and I am the host of Safe Space, the ABA podcast. Be sure to listen up for those code words so that way you can receive your free CEUs. I am super excited today to talk about organizational behavior management, which is a subset of ABA. ABA is not just about autism therapy. So I'm super excited to be talking all about OBM with Jake Watson, who is the co-owner of Avenue Behavior Consulting. Welcome to the podcast, Jake.
Thank you. So excited to be here with you.
Excited for you to be here. So I'm super excited to know a little bit about your journey. How did you get here?
That is a long-winded story, so I won't take up the entire time that we have together. But to give a little bit of that background and an introduction, I received my BCBA certification in 2020, and through several series and steps, I was exposed to OBM, and I found a deep passion for it. And so I became certified in the fall of 2021, and since then I've been approaching different projects, whether that was internal in organizations or externally consulting for other organizations. And so that's what initially got me into OBM. It was the BCBA certification, various projects within that, and I just kind of continued to see that, like you said, ABA is not just ABA therapy for kiddos that are diagnosed with autism. But it is very much behavior analysis can be applied in so many different ways. And OBM is kind of what I gravitated towards and passionate about. And I love applying it in a variety of settings.
I love that so much. I love that, you know, this is something that you're very passionate about too, because, you know, a lot of people really don't realize that ABA, like I said, is not just autism therapy, or not just therapy for children diagnosed with autism or developmental disabilities. So for those listeners who don't know about organizational behavior management, could you give a definition of what OBM means to you?
Definitely. OBM is a subspecialty of ABA, or applied behavior analysis. And essentially, if I put it in a nutshell, what OBM is it's applying the behavioral sciences to workplace settings. And so it's addressing things like performance. That is something that we break those down into behavioral terms, and we address it through behavior analysis. And so we still use the ABC model. We still focus highly on reinforcement. We still use prompts. But instead of doing it on an individual basis, we focus on workplaces. That could be with an individual performer, or it could be with an entire performer group, a department, the organization as a whole. And so really, if I narrow it down and hone in on what OBM is, it's ABA applied to organizational settings.
Love it. That's a very simplified version, very easy to understand. So I really appreciate that breakdown.
Definitely.
Yeah. So one of the things that we talked about when we first met was that you mentioned feeling like a brand new BCBA without the influence or impact that you wanted initially when you first became a BCBA. How did you end up navigating this?
That is something that I'm so excited to talk about, because I feel like there's a lot of BCBAs out there who are in organizations and see organizational pitfalls, shortcomings, difficulties, challenges, whether that's with RBTs, leadership, or everything in between. And so I was in one of those organizations that had some disconnects in their processes. And when I was a brand new BCBA, I didn't have that influence to be able to approach those projects and create that change that I knew would benefit our clients, our parents, our staff members, and our organization as a whole. And so I am extremely passionate about the book and the concepts in 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And one of the concepts in there, it talks about we need to focus on our circle of influence rather than this exterior circle of concern. So, for example, outside of ABA, OBM, if there's a war going on across the world, there's some things that I can do within that, but I can't change what's going on directly in that war across the globe. What I can do in my circle of influence is I might be able to research and find a worthy cause to donate to that will support my perspective on the war. And so within that, I realized that as a new BCBA, I was learning more about the organizational processes, the billing processes, kind of the ins and outs and the back end of what goes on in an ABA company. But I didn't have the influence or the impact to approach those projects and changes. And so that's what exposed me and introduced me to OBM, is I found a certification. I found a way that I could put myself in a position to have that type of influence. And so that's why I initially sought out the OBM certification. And once I got in those processes, I saw the direct correlations and ties of it's very behavior. It is behaviorally based. It's a subspecialty of ABA. And so it was very easy to understand the applications and the why behind OBM can be so beneficial in an organization. So becoming certified in OBM put me in more of an influential role to approach those issues and challenges that I was seeing in our organization, the comments that I was hearing from my colleagues from RBTs, and to be able to have a deeper competency on what to do about those things. And so that is something that I think I'll always be passionate about it, because I am extremely passionate about behavior change, whether that's with individuals, workplaces, families, parents, whatever it might be. I love behavior change. And so OBM put me in that position to be able to approach those challenges a lot more effectively and generate that influence to approach those within the organization I was with.
You know, I really appreciate that. You know, we work in applied behavior analysis to see behavior change. And a lot of us, you know, who work in ABA for, you know, the children that we work with or the clients that we work with that have autism or developmental disabilities, we often look for behavior change within our clients. But more often than not, we really don't look at staff change all that much. Like, we really focus on behavior change in our client. Yeah, we might say, oh, we want our technicians to do X, Y, Z, or oh, we want our BCBAs to bill this many hours, but we tend to focus more on the client. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about together was that you noticed that high turnover and that disconnect in the processes. So tell us a little bit about some of the issues that identified and how you were able to address these issues to improve organizational culture within the clinic that you were at.
Definitely. Those are the two big issues there that I wanted to approach. One was our culture in the organization, and the other was the high RBT turnover that we were seeing. So with the organizational culture, that was something that was the dynamic for that organization. We had two different clinics, and there were kind of these niches or cliques at each of those clinics. And so one of the clinics got along really well, but we did have RBTs and staff members that would travel between the clinics. And so we kind of had one click at this clinic and one click at the other clinic. And so in traveling back and forth, we had those conversations about what was going on at the other clinics, but that talk was very negative. And what that generated, it was just a very toxic work culture. There was a lot of gossip. There was a lot of negative comments about other staff members, about their approaches to treatment plans, to interventions, to how they were prompting. Very ABA talk in some of it, but also just that disconnect in, I don't like that individual. I just don't, just those types of comments. So with that organizational culture, I wanted something that would bring the organization as a whole together. Now, I will say within that, the company that I worked for was a multidisciplinary team. So we had an ABA department, we had a speech department, and we had an OT department. Within that, my focus was ABA and the ABA department, because that was what I was most familiar with. Our speech and OT departments have different billing processes, different data collection systems. And so in focusing on the ABA department, and that was where I saw most of that toxic work culture, What we ended up doing was to address that, we focused on organizational values and we created a set of values for the ABA department. So we got together and we had team meetings where everyone was able to have their input on what is important to you in the workplace. In gathering and compiling that list of values, we came up with a culture deck. And a culture deck isn't something that I created specifically. It's not a this brand new idea. A culture deck is something that many organizations apply. But what it is it's gathering those values and being able to focus on certain set values to generate a certain type of culture within an organization. So we identified certain values of respect, humility, hard work, teamwork, and collaboration. And there were some other values in there as well. Once we had those values identified, we needed to break that down even more to understand what does respect look like? What does teamwork look like on a daily basis? How can we show humility in a way that it's a target behavior, that it's something that everyone can observe, that we can measure, and something that's reliable? So if we are collecting IOA on that behavior, we're able to do that with high fidelity. And so we were able to break those things down, and that, especially at an ABA organization where everyone has that behavioral foundational knowledge, it was really fun to participate in that, but it was also something that got everyone on the same page. This is what we're trying to accomplish. These are the values that we identified, and these are specific behavioral examples that you can show those values in. What supplemented that is direct ABA strategies. We identified prompting strategies and we identified reinforcers. For reinforcers, we conducted surveys to identify what staff members would find reinforcing in showing those values related to our culture. And then we just built off that. Each week, we would review those values in team meetings. We would highlight that and provide social reinforcers. And then we had other reinforcers as well. And so it was really applying a lot of direct ABA strategies, but again, in that workplace context and addressing something like culture, where respect is something that can be very subjective. But that is very big in what OBM is taking these subjective, abstract concepts and making them objective. That's probably one of the biggest challenges that we see is how do we take these things that the way people speak, especially in organizations outside of ABA, how do we make those things objective so everyone's looking at the same behaviors, the same targets that we want to achieve? And what we call those pinpoints. So in OBM, that's a huge term that if you're reading OBM literature, research articles, blog posts, you'll see that word pinpoint. That's one of the first things that you'll see. And essentially what that means is precision and target behaviors. We want those operational definitions. We want that very observable, clearly defined behavior so that we can all work on that as a team and work together to accomplish that. So that's how we approached the change in culture that we were looking for. We had really great success in that. We did have some RBTs leave. That wasn't directly because we implemented a culture deck. But we were able to bring on new staff members, and that was something that to be able to have new staff members coming on and start in that process made a world of difference. We were able to help them understand these are things that are extremely important to us right now, and we need your help in showing that. So we saw some really great success as it relates to our organizational culture. The other issue in that was the high turnover with RBTs. It was really frustrating to, especially when these new RBTs were coming on, we were trying to develop a great culture, but we did still see RBTs leaving. And so then I started to analyze why are they still leaving? What is happening that's generating this turnover? And something that I identified was we were the type of company that, yes, we had training. But a lot of times that training was to understand the administrative processes. And then they were thrown into working with clients. They would cross-train for a week and then they were on their own. They would be supervised once a week by a BCBA, of course, contingent on the client and caseload and everything like that. I do think we had good supervision processes, but it wasn't enough. Our training processes weren't as robust as we needed them to be. And so I took a deep dive into our training program, our onboarding processes, our interview processes, and hiring processes, because I started to recognize that all of those things were connected. The questions that we were asking in interviews to identify the types of RBTs that we wanted on our team. And then once an RBT was hired, how could we modify those processes to create a better training system so that by the time that onboarding parameter and time frame was fulfilled, that number one, the RBT felt extremely confident that I am ready to work with these clients. I know that I have the support, but I'm ready to work with these clients. So what we did was we created a list of competencies that we wanted the RBT to understand before they started working with clients. And what we changed in that, a big change, number one, was creating that list of competencies because it was very specific. It had different aspects of the job responsibilities. So we did have things like cleaning duties. We had our direct service competency list. We had supervision competencies. So we had all of those broken down and they were in behavioral terms. But then I took it one step further and I set the list of competencies into different categories. First, we wanted to verbally train the new hire in what those things meant. So what does it mean as it relates to cleaning duties, or a simple example, washing dishes? What are the expectations in that? We wanted to verbally talk about that and model that skill, but then we applied the opposite side of that. We wanted the RBT, or new hire, to then let us know what they understood in that and for them to show that skill as well. So we increased our training processes and the support provided within that so that the RBT felt confident and we felt confident at the end of that onboarding process. The change that we saw in that is I actually ended up leaving 6 months into implementing that. But in that 6 month period, we had 100% retention of our RBTs. So we saw an absolutely drastic change of the RBTs that we hired, we brought on, and we were able to keep them at least until I left the organization at the time. And so really big projects that we addressed, but I'm thankful that it was in the ABA department and that in those initial projects, we were able to see some really significant results that benefited the RBTs, which trickles into number one, client progress and family support, but also benefited the organization overall.
That's wow. If you could see my face, for those of you who are listening on Spotify, RSS, or Apple Podcasts, my face, like I'm literally dropping my jaw because it's so beautiful to see, you know, the effects of what you did and how you were able to keep staff on for the entire time that you were actually in doing this. You know, you played such a key role in all of this. One of my main follow-ups to that. So you mentioned at the very beginning, you had team meetings where you would discuss like what your guys' values were. And I was curious to know, what did these team meetings look like and who participated in those meetings when you were first developing the restructuring of the onboarding and training?
I love that question. I think it's a robust answer. In looking at those team meetings, there were, to address the team meeting question, it was the ABA department. And so we wanted to bring everyone together on a weekly basis to be able to really talk about how are things going, how are we implementing these values, and how can we highlight that with each individual or as a group and provide that group type of reinforcement. Before we were able to conduct those team meetings and have the culture deck established and implemented, a huge part of something that we talk about in OBM and that is very crucial is to have stakeholder buy-in. So something that took place in those initial meetings is we have a BCBA team lead. They needed to be on board with that. And that was one that initially in the culture deck, I was actually able to collaborate a lot with that colleague. And we would brainstorm a lot and have a lot of conversations about what do we want this to look like? How do we want to implement it? And there was a lot of collaboration in that. With the higher-ups at the organization, the CEO and the COO, they were more of, do you approve of us applying this? Here's the reasons why. And what we did is we broke it down in terms of, these are the results that we're looking for. We want to improve organizational culture, and this is how we're going to do it. We're going to identify the specific behaviors related to the values that we want to implement. A big part of that stakeholder buy-in is because they're the ones that have an opportunity to reinforce. And that was an area that we did get some pushback in. We didn't have a good parameter of how much of a budget are we able to allocate to changing organizational culture. Because a lot of what we saw was we did have these ideas of having luncheons, giving bonuses, but honestly, I stray away from any monetary reinforcer in organizations. There's a huge misconception. That would be a tangent that I could go on for the rest of our time. But we wanted to find something that we could apply that was truly valued to our ABA department, the individuals, and as a group, but not something that was going to cause a burden on the organization, because the monetary reinforcers or something probably can't keep up with that for the rest of time that they're running that organization. So we wanted to find something that was sustainable. And so we had a lot of those back-end meetings breaking down all of the, what are the specific results that we want to achieve? What are those pinpointed behaviors? And then we started to look into how can we apply that throughout the week in a daily framework? How can we apply that in a weekly framework? How can we apply that in person? How can we apply that through email communication and other aspects of technology? How can we show that in the environment, in our clinic space? And so we had a lot of back-end conversations to structure that change in organizational culture. But I will say that it's something that if I were to try to apply that project of just, this is what I want to do, this is my idea, please check the box and say yes, I guarantee that project would not have been successful. We needed to have that collaborative approach where the stakeholders, the CEO and COO, clearly understood, we want to approach this to benefit the organization. They need to see how it's going to benefit them, I would say individually, but also them as owners of the company. And so once we got all of that established and fine-tuned and all of us as leaders were on the same page, then we were able to roll it out with the daily, the prompts that we were going to use, the reinforcers that we wanted to apply, and the structure of how to implement that daily, weekly, and through the variety of forms of communication.
Interesting. I'm curious to know from your perspective too, because you mentioned you stray away from monetary, because monetary, it does eventually run out. You know, monetary is not 100% feasible, really not feasible at all. But I'm curious to know, what did you find was like the top reinforcer that you were able to see within your staff? What was the most valuable thing for your staff members when you were doing this project?
Love that question. Giving the RBT breaks.
Really?
Sometimes what we saw was one thing that we implemented was just almost a break card, was when we saw the RBT showing those values, we would hand them a one of those cards, and it was either a 15 or 30 minute break. So during their session, especially during BCBA supervision, and we requested that RBTs use those break cards when a BCBA was supervising. However, that wasn't a requirement. Excuse me. So when they got those cards, they could give us one of those cards. And as a BCBA, we would then go work directly with the client and they could step out. And if it was 15 or 30 minutes, they were free to leave the office. They could, you know, go pick up a snack. They could just hang out in the break room. But that was an extra break that they got. What we found in that, or something that we found that to be beneficial, was it reinforced the RBTs but BCBA is working directly with those clients, it was a great opportunity for us to probe skills and collect data and really develop more rapport with those clients and be able to understand better where that client was currently at, which gave us an even better perspective on how to help the client and how to help the RBTs. So it ended up being what I consider a huge win-win, that the RBTs felt highly reinforced, but we were better able to connect with clients and families and RBTs in that way too.
It's so good that you say that too, because, you know, I've worked with a lot of different behavior analysts that are like, I'm so over doing direct. I got my BCBA credential to not do direct anymore. And it's like, why don't you want to do direct? You know, you should be trying to do direct because you need to connect with your clients. You know, I'm actually, to give you an idea, I live in Florida, but I work in a clinic based out of Virginia. I'm currently in Virginia right now recording this. And being there in person for me is highly reinforcing because I do get to actually be with my clients. I actually do get to play with my clients. I actually do get to connect with the RBTs on a more personal level than just being a little computer screen person. You know, I don't get to do that. I get to actually be there. So it's kind of interesting to hear about how reinforcing breaks are, but also more importantly, how it's helped with like the connection and actually not just pairing with our clients, but pairing with our staff, the people that are helping us with our clients.
Yeah, for sure. And I love that you brought up, I think there's such a big difference in, so after I left that organization that we've talked a lot about, I worked for another organization for a brief time that I did provide virtual supervision. And that was something just like you, I noticed such a big difference in that. When we can be face to face with a client, and I agree with working direct, my response to those BCBAs who might feel like I became a BCBA to not work direct, I do understand that. There is a deep competency of behavior analysis, and you worked very hard to achieve that. I will never take that away. But I also respond with, you're missing out. It's hard work. I know that. But it is something that when we're able to directly generate that behavior change, and when parents directly thank you for the hard work that we put in and the progress that's seen and the stress that relieves in home and the new skills that are developed and their client is communicating in new ways, for you to be the one that has a direct impact in that, I find that highly reinforcing. And I feel like when we're not working direct with clients, at times we miss out on those contingencies for reinforcement.
I completely agree with that. I find that so reinforcing. Believe it or not, a parent saying thank you is probably like one of the highest reinforcers for me because of the fact that like I know that I have done something to directly impact their child in a positive way. So hearing thank you and hearing thank you for all you do. The work that you guys do is really amazing. I appreciate your time and seeing my child. Those comments are so reinforcing. That's why we're in this field. We want to see change.
Yeah, it makes it all worth it. All the hard days, all the challenging behaviors, makes it all worth it.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the things I wanted to dive into was even after, you know, you worked on this project and even after the improvement of your onboarding and training, you mentioned to me in our conversation that there were still some challenges with leadership and especially with like personality dynamics as well. How were you able to approach these issues?
That is something that I was still new in OBM, and I need to be very open and honest about that. The project that we conducted in our ABA department was highly successful. What I missed in that, and as I've learned more and developed additional competencies in OBM, is that organizational values are what guide an organization or should guide an organization. So what we did with our project in implementing a culture deck is we came up with our own values that we thought were important to the ABA department. Our organization had a different set of values that were established at the onset of that company. So we created almost these two different sets of values. And yes, the ones that we came up with were highly beneficial. But what I missed was the disconnects with leadership and the shortcomings that we or that the leadership saw in our performance were because they weren't seeing how we were applying the organizational values. I will add to that that we never focused on organizational values. I heard about the organizational values and mission statement when I was first hired in the first day of onboarding and training. Never heard of it again, unless I went to the company website, and it's very clearly there on the website. But we didn't talk about that in team meetings. We didn't talk about that and build on the mission statement and really focus on this is why we are an organization. This is everything that we should be focusing on. And I like their mission statement. I think it's a good mission statement. But I do feel like we lost sight of that over time. And so in addressing the challenges with leadership after that culture project, that is what I started to focus on and learn more about. There were a variety of reasons that I left that organization. One of them were we didn't see eye to eye or clearly on how to implement those things and how to live by those values and mission statement. But like I said, that wasn't it. I do think we were able to have a lot of beneficial conversations. I was able to present things that I thought would be beneficial. Some of that was just they would just say no to it. And seeing the successes that we had in other projects, I didn't feel like that was justified. And so that was part of something that put me off, and I didn't like that response in a variety of issues and concerns. But it was also something that I had spent a lot of time at that organization. I wanted to try something new. It had been, you know, 2-3 years of being a BCBA at that point. Well, 2 years of being a BCBA. So I was ready for a change. And so that was something. I do not blame the leadership at that organization for why I left. But I do think that if I could go back, in hindsight as 2020, I would focus a lot more on those organizational values and what I could contribute to living the organizational mission statement and values. How I could embed that into RBT training, how I could embed that into team meetings, and really try to get everyone on board through organizational values and organizational missions, because that is something that organizational leaders should be living by that too. If they're not, there should be no reason that there should be pushback on that. If you're approaching a conversation with, hey, I'm looking at changing this, I see this challenge, X, Y, and Z, I think if we focus on this aspect of the mission statement and applying these values, I think we could create some positive change. That is something that leaders, I don't see pushing back much on. And so in my initial approach and as a new OBM specialist, that was the disconnect that I saw as we tried to implement new values, which was successful in one department, but then I lost sight of continuing to apply organizational values over time.
What do you give, like, what type of advice would you give to BCBAs or really anybody who's facing those similar issues of, you know, we see that these values are there, but it's not really continuing to happen. Like, what kind of advice would you give to somebody?
I think a big part of that is the stakeholder buy-in. That when we're seeing challenges, a lot of times we're going to our supervisor with those challenges, or that's the productive way to do it. We might go to colleagues or supervisees, but that might just be venting. That might be a term that I would use for it. And so when we're looking to generate that lasting change in an organization, and we're talking to supervisors, we're talking to leadership, I would present those challenges very openly and honestly, but with that supplemental information in, I think that we can generate change if we focus on these organizational values that relate to these challenges. So an example of that would be a lot of organizations, especially in ABA, have that value of putting the client first. So we can connect that value of putting the client first with a big challenge in the field right now of RBT data collection. We see the challenge of accurate data collection, quality data collection, high rates of IOA within data collection. So we can use the organizational value of putting the client first and supplement that with, we have a real challenge right now of data collection within for our RBTs. If we focus on that value of putting the client first and the reasoning behind accurate, reliable data collection, that is one way to truly put the client first so that we're accurately reflecting progress, so that we're accurately seeing and able to analyze those data points to generate further progress or truly see that we're not making progress and be able to modify our interventions to assist the client and families in creating that progress.
Wow. You know, it's amazing. It's amazing to even just like hear all the things that, you know, you've done. And also, you know, it really does come down to stakeholder buy-in. I feel like that's really something that I as a BCBA have noticed too, where it's like, you know, at what point do we, at what point do we need to figure out, like, how can we best approach the situation? How can we figure out how we can sort of compromise or meet in the middle? Or if there's something that just can't happen, like, what can we do? So it's really, I think it's really great that you talk a lot about that. And I think it's really great that this project was as successful as it was within that organization.
Definitely. I am too, because I don't know if I would have continued to be motivated if I put all that hard work into implementing something and then nothing came of it. That would be very deflating. But honestly, yeah. I don't think it would change my passion for behavioral analysis and the behavioral sciences or OBM. I think that they're fascinating fields and I would find a way to get motivated again.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I want to go ahead and say our first code word. Our first code word is the thing that we've been talking about all podcast, OBM. Three letters, OBM. That's how you spell OBM. So on the note of your passion for OBM, so your passion led you and your wife to start your own business. Tell us a little bit about this decision, what you offer, and how you market OBM beyond ABA clinics.
It is an absolute adventure to be a business owner as a BCBA with my wife, but the funnest adventure that I've been on, say, outside of having kids. Within starting our own business, something that we recognized was there is a lot more to ABA than just clinical ABA therapy. When we recognize that there's a lot of different opportunities out there. Again, I was in a place where I was looking for other opportunities. I am the type of person that I want to create an impact, whether that's for individuals, whether it's for families. And with OBM, what I saw was there's an opportunity to create organization-wide change. And that can be a big impact. So when we started looking into those things, we realized, hey, we could do this. Like we could try starting our own company. And we figured out the ways that we were very confident that it would work. Initially, we started with providing direct ABA, and I was doing OBM consulting. And at the time, my wife was in a certification program to become a sexual behavior analyst. So she became certified and specializes in sexual behavior analysis now. That's SBA is the acronym that I would give that. And so once we started diving into these subspecialties of ABA, honestly, the opportunities became pretty natural. She had a very good understanding of how to get in with insurance companies and the credentialing processes, the billing practices. And so that was something I'm extremely grateful for, is she knew a lot of that information, the compliance practices. And so starting our ABA practices was fairly easy. A lot of work went into it, but there wasn't a lot that was overly confusing for us or those huge roadblocks that would derail an organization. And so that was what we started with, was ABA. And then I was just looking for opportunities for OBM consulting. And so what I initially started doing was advertising to daycares, because I thought that was something that had a very similar approach to ABA and working with young children in daycares. But it also came about because we were getting a lot of contacts with, hey, the daycare said my child might have autism, and so I'm reaching out to you to see that. And number one, I was like, oh, they shouldn't be saying that. They are not diagnosing professionals. And so that was something that I wanted to look into more, but also just providing that support to those families. And so that led us more into a parent coaching that, you know, number one, we recommended to, if you have that concern, our recommendation is to go see your pediatrician, your doctor, and they will take it from there. Daycare director or staff member is not someone who should be giving that recommendation or insight into a diagnosis. And so we started providing parent coaching, and so it was ABA parent coaching, which led to the connections with the daycares directly. Because I would approach the daycares and ask about their processes and, hey, I connected with this parent, I just wanted to touch base. And that opened the door to, I found a couple organizations that also had very high turnover. And so that was something I was able to address, is, you know, I've worked on a project with an organization in the past, and I was very open in that it was an organization that I was working in. It was an internal project. But I also explained OBM at a glance and how I would be able to benefit that organization. And so being able to connect with daycares have been the largest organizations or the most numerous organizations that I've consulted with in OBM. But that is kind of what led me to be able to find those opportunities, make those connections, and develop those networks to have OBM consultation opportunities. A lot of the other opportunities I've had in OBM have come from parent referrals or just the networking connections that I've developed over time, and I'm extremely thankful for those. Outside of our ABA practices, our parent coaching, and our OBM opportunities that we have for consultation is our SBA consultation. That is not something I do. That is directly with my wife. She's phenomenal in that. But she's the one that she does provide SBA consultations to those individuals who are showing sexual behaviors. And I think it's absolutely fascinating. I you know, like I said, I'm not the specialist in that area, but she'll consult with individuals and she has networks within that, but then she also will consult with schools on when students are showing those behaviors in the classroom. She has some really cool insights and ways to approach those behaviors through that behavior analytic lens. So those are our four big categories. We have ABA, parent coaching, OBM, and SBA, and that's Avenue Behavior in a nutshell.
Wow. You guys do a lot of stuff, but let me tell you, the work that you guys are doing is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, the fact that you do OBM, the fact that you do SBA, it's like, you know, those are two major topics outside of your typical ABA with children with autism. And it's just so fascinating to hear that you guys are providing those services. And you mentioned daycares. And one of the things I wanted to bring up was that you've consulted not just with daycares, but even like NASA and the Air Force. So I'm curious to know from that perspective, what kind of challenges did you face in those settings? And did they seem or were they any different from the same kind of or from the challenges that you saw within the ABA clinic that you did this initial onboarding process for?
Definitely different projects. So the Air Force and NASA were both through the network of connections that I have. That's how I was presented with those opportunities. But it was initially, we're seeing this challenge that we're looking to address, and are you in a position that you could help us with that? And so I think what was unique in that is, could a BCBA address those challenges that I did at the Air Force, at NASA, yes, that's not something that I don't think a BCBA wouldn't be able to do. But OBM put me in such a different position because I was able to approach, if I use NASA as the example, I was, my direct correspondence with NASA, I would have meetings about once a month. We collaborated for about a year. One of my final projects, or kind of the culmination of that, was to give a workshop at NASA. And so in looking at what took place in all of those collaboration meetings, having an understanding of OBM changed my perspective from asking questions about what is this individual showing in their behavior. I didn't have a focus on just one individual. Because we were talking about several departments, several staff members, several different leaders within their hierarchy, I needed that perspective within OBM to be able to address that, okay, this performer group is showing challenges, but how do those challenges, how are those impacted by supervisor behaviors? How are those challenges impacted by NASA's processes and systems? And so being able to have that OBM perspective put me in a much different position to just addressing individual behaviors or establishing group contingencies. It allowed me to dive into a lot of the OBM concepts. If we use that ABC model, but then we break that down further and we look at, are the consequences positive or negative, immediate or future, certain or uncertain? And so we have a whole nother analytic tool that we use within that. And that's something that really benefited my relationship with NASA initially, was being able to approach it through that OBM lens. And I do not think that that relationship would have lasted as long as it did within that project if I didn't have the OBM competencies that I developed in those initial projects and in the other ways that I've tried to stay current within the OBM frameworks.
Wow. I mean, it is kind of amazing to be able to see like what types of challenges you were able to see within completely different organizations. You know, we as BCBAs are used to working with, you know, working with a variety of BCBAs, working with technicians, but to be able to expand that beyond that medical model care is really kind of a beautiful thing. Because, you know, from my perspective, like you're explaining, you know, about how different staff members and their behaviors can contribute to other people's behaviors, which I feel like can be seen from, you know, the perspective of being in a medical clinic. But at the same time, I can see where the differences are too, just because of the fact that it's completely different types of organizations. So it's really cool to be able to like talk to you a little bit more about that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of depth that goes into that. Because when we look at our ABA therapy, when we're working one-on-one with a client, when we're thinking about reinforcers, for example, we're thinking about reinforcers for that individual, right? Mm-hmm. But when we're looking at a performer group at NASA or the Air Force, that those reinforcers, it's not always just going to be one single reinforcer, but it's also not something that we're reinforcing each individual in that group. We need to be able to find a set of reinforcers that will reinforce that performer group. And I would say the same thing with measurements, that with measurements and working with individuals, we have measurements based on single target behaviors that we're going to collect different types of measurements, frequency, interval data. There's a lot of different measurements that we use. But when we're looking at 50 performers, 500 performers, I can't be there individually to collect data for 500 performers. So data collection and measurements can look different. Identifying and implementing reinforcers can look different. Another big aspect of OBM is feedback, that we all give feedback, we all receive feedback, but there are behavioral contingencies and strategies that go into that. That when we apply feedback as a consequence, when we're trying to make that reinforcing, like our constructive criticism feedback sandwich, we can really take what we're trying to be a reinforcer and it ends up being a punisher because we add that you did great, but, and there goes the reinforcer. So we learn about how to apply feedback as just reinforce on the consequent side, but then in the next opportunity that they have to show that, use the constructive criticism part, the things that we want to change, use that as an antecedent strategy. So before you're going into a session, have that be the time on, hey, last session I noticed this, let's work on X, Y, and Z today. I'll be here to support that. Instead of throwing that in right after the previous session and trying to reinforce, but tearing it down with that you did great, but this wasn't as good.
Yeah, it's so amazing to even just talk about like feedback as a whole, because, you know, we in ABA are constantly talking about how we have to, you know, word our feedback and feed the sandwich is what I hear all the time, the sandwich model. You should start out with that verbal praise, then go into the constructive criticism, and then the verbal praise. And I can tell you from my experience of like having seen that, it does sort of feel like a slap in the face at times, just because it's like, you did so great, but here's what you messed up on. So next time I expect you to change that. But hey, overall, good job. And I've done that too. I've been guilty of that myself. But it's one of those things where it's like you sort of learn from what other people do. And in my case, like I've had to sort of see how I can best individualize feedback and be able to highlight on the positive things. And then kind of see like, okay, what are some next steps that we need to work on too? So it's like, again, amazing to just talk about that as a whole too.
Yeah, and it really, I mean, in looking at how we apply, I think that the sandwich model for feedback is very societal. It's something that at this point we've all heard about. It's easy to understand. Give a good, then a bad, then a good. We can all implement that very easily and very well. But when we break that down behaviorally, it does end up a lot of times becoming a punisher and not a reinforcer. And that's opposite of what we're trying to do. We're trying to reinforce. We want to do that. But we also need to see growth and change and progress for our staff members. And so a lot of different strategies to apply within that. If it's, you know, what I try to do personally is whatever behavior I'm trying to reinforce, I reinforce that behavior and leave it at that. If there are things that I need to provide that feedback for growth and change in my staff members, I might send an email later that evening or the next day. I might be present and, like I said, use it as an antecedent. But as it relates to reinforcement, if we focus on reinforcing performance as that consequence, we can delay that feedback, and it doesn't have to be missing opportunities. But it's just delaying that to where we've disconnected the contingency for reinforcement from their session or that direct behavior, so that we've disconnected that reinforcement and the effectiveness there. And then we send that email on, hey, I was thinking about today's session. These are things I want to focus on in the next session. I'll remind you tomorrow before session, or I'll be there tomorrow with you, anything like that.
I love that. Can we just retire the sandwich model, please? Like, can we please retire?
Yes, we can.
Yes. I love that. In one of our previous conversations, too, we talked a little bit about system analysis. We talked about understanding behavioral systems and the three tiers of OBM. So, first of all, what are the three tiers of OBM and how do these tiers work together to bring about effective change within organizations?
It's a great question. The three tiers that we talk about in OBM is in single word answers, we have systems as the highest tier, that systems are organization wide, or systems run an organization. I should say behavior runs an organization, but system is our highest level tier. Within systems, we have processes, and that's our second tier. And then we have performance and performers, which is our third tier. So when we're looking into OBM projects, when we're analyzing things from an OBM lens, when we're analyzing a specific performance, there are times that we can directly modify that performance and that performer's behavior. But there are also times when when that performance is not directly in that performer's control. For example, submitting a billing note, a session note for billing. If the computer system is down and that performer is unable to submit that note, that performer shouldn't be held accountable for that. And so something that we need to look into at times are with certain performances, how do the processes in that organization affect that performance? And how do the systems affect all of that at large? And so that's going to look into the systems is going to be how does HR and their systems interact with the BCBAs and their systems? How do those processes of communication between HR and the BCBAs, how do those processes affect organizational effectiveness? And then last, how do the specific behaviors and performances within those processes and systems affect the overall organizational growth and efficiency?
Love that. I love that. And, you know, one of the things that we've talked about too, you know, you being somebody who is very well versed in OBM, you know, how do you advocate for the need for a behavioral lens in organizations across different sectors?
I think that's something that when I have those opportunities to talk with organizations outside of ABA, so many of those organizations and professionals just have no understanding of behavior. Like they don't understand reinforcement. They don't understand prompting. They don't understand how to observe and analyze behavior in an ABC model. And so a lot of times, it's something that's very foreign, and the hardest part is to be able to make that initial connection. Because it's so foreign, people don't understand the benefits of if I go in and I say, I'm a behavior analyst, I would love to come in and assess your organization. They have no connection. There's no connection with behavior analyst. How are you going to help? There's just not that understanding of what we do and how we analyze behavior. So that's the part that takes creativity. Once you're in the door, pretty much anything that we talk about, the response is, wow, that makes sense. I've never thought about that before, though. And so really, there's a lot of education that goes into it on here's how you can observe a behavior and just teaching the ABC model and teaching about function of behavior. But then building that on let's focus on prompting as an antecedent and reinforcement as a consequence, you'll see huge change in your organization. But then we're continually building on that. So the biggest thing is organizations just don't have a behavioral understanding. We're not taught that in our K-12 education. And unless we're specializing in ABA or trying to become a BCBA, we really don't get that in college either.
And it's very true. I mean, I can even tell you, you know, I never would have even thought about that, you know, back then. And also, too, you know, you're using ABA principles and you're using behavioral principles outside of, you know, your traditional settings. And, you know, you would think like, oh, this behavior analyst, they don't know my company. But really, like, we know about behaviors. We know about, you know, how to look at behavior and how we might intervene on behaviors. I say that in quotations, you know, or how we might change a certain system. So it's really interesting to see how ABA and how OBM concepts can be applied in other sectors, you know, and it really does take that lens. From a BCBA's perspective, I am curious to know, did you ever get any pushback whenever you did? You know, your initial consultations or if you had consultations throughout, did you ever see anybody come to you and be like, dude, I don't agree. This is not it. You know, did you ever have that at all?
I think probably the closest to that would be, you know, if I send out marketing information to an organization, I just don't hear back from them. That might be the closest thing to I don't agree or just that lack of understanding and how would this benefit my organization? I think that's poor marketing. I think anytime we're able to have those conversations, personally, I always strive for collaboration. I'm huge on, you know, going back to Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. That is something, one of the seven habits is to find and think win-win. And so for me, if I see it as beneficial, but the stakeholder doesn't, we still have more things to figure out. And so I haven't received a lot of that pushback of, I don't think this will work, but I do think that's it, at least in part my approach in, I am not the type that pushes, you have to do this if you want to see growth. Because there is something that's going to really scream to me that if I don't have that buy-in, they're not going to implement the interventions. They're not going to collect data. They're not going to consistently reinforce. And at that point, of course, it's not going to be effective. I completely agree. So let's go back to the drawing board and let's find out what is going to work.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, you know, throughout the episode, stakeholder buy-in is extremely important. And without that, how are you going to get the progress that you want, you know?
Yeah.
So one thing that we've talked about a little bit before, too, is you're actually teaching an OBM course over at St. Edward's University in their master's program. Tell us a little bit about the course that you're teaching and what you aim to teach your students about the significance and the application of OBM in various industries.
It is such a fun role to be in, to be able to interact with students and reflect back on where I was at in my master's program. And what's fun about St. Edward's in their ABA program is the way that their course sequence falls is OBM is in a position that they've learned about a lot of other courses. It's one of the later courses that they take. And so I really approach the OBM course with a perspective of, let me help you generalize your ABA concepts and knowledge to and really just blow your mind with OBM. But I also want everyone to know, that's my students, that's anyone listening, it's anyone that I come in contact with, that OBM does not have to be something that this is what I want to make my career. OBM is something that will benefit absolutely anyone in a supervisory position, a leadership role, a mentorship, a collaborative role or opportunity. And so that's one of the big things that I try to help my students understand is whether you go into ABA or whether you're in another field or industry, because I do have students that aren't in clinical ABA or education. That's the majority of my students. But I have students that work for baseball teams, that work in hospitals. And so not everyone is in a setting that I can just talk clinical ABA. And so I really want all my students and everyone to understand the OBM is not something that you have to do that as your career. But diving into OBM and understanding how to apply OBM will make you a better supervisor. It will make you a better mentor, a better colleague. There's so many benefits to it that are not directly ABA related. It just helps you have a different and more generalized perspective of ABA and how to apply ABA concepts and principles through that workplace lens. But something I'll add to that is when I think of OBM, there's a lot of times in my parent coaching that I have OBM thoughts and perspectives when looking at family systems and family dynamics, because that is something that in a lot of ways, no, a family isn't a workplace, but there are a lot of behaviors there that have systems, processes, and performances. And so even looking at family dynamics, I'm so grateful for having a background in OBM because of the way that I'm able to analyze those systems, processes, and how that generates more effective interventions. So many benefits of, even if you're not looking to do it for your career, OBM will benefit you as a supervisor and as a BCBA. So that's what I always hope to impart on my students and anyone that I come in contact with.
That's awesome. You make me wish that I was taking an OBM course, and I wish that I could have taken one when I was doing my master's program, because honestly, you know, so to give you an idea, I'm the director of clinical development at the clinic that I work at, and I work with a variety of technicians. I work with BCBA candidates, BCABA candidates, BCABAs, anybody who wants to grow their career within applied behavior analysis within, you know, the medical clinical clinic, basically. And, you know, for me, I feel like had I picked up some OBM concepts, you know, whether I take that at school or whether I, you know, just find out more about OBM concepts for me would help me in my role, just because of the fact that, you know, I want to be able to identify what is highly reinforcing for my staff so that way they do want to grow. But then more importantly, I also want them to know that there's other options outside of just doing clinical work, you know? At the end of the day, like being in ABA and doing the medical model of ABA, you know, is one facet of ABA. But there's so many other subsets of ABA that I feel like really need to be dived into. So I really appreciate this conversation so very much.
Of course, I'm so glad that we've been able to talk and, you know, sit down together and just chat. That's what it feels like. And so,
yeah.
You know, of course, I love talking about OBM and sharing that information because it's what I'm passionate about. But I think you're a great person to do that with. And so it's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Jake. And I want to go ahead and give the second code word. That code word is growth. That is G-R-O-W-T-H. That is the word growth. So let's talk about the future of OBM. Where do you see the future of OBM going, not just within the field of your medical ABA, but in broader organizations?
My hope would be that behavioral concepts and understandings become more foundational in organizations. And I think that hope is hand in hand with the growth of ABA, that with ABA being so closely connected to autism, I do think that we are in the works or initial works of expanding ABA and helping people understand that ABA is not just for autism. ABA is behavior analysis and it's focusing on pro-social behavior change. So as we develop and expand our general societal knowledge of ABA and behavioral foundations, I think that that's when we'll start to see, oh, we should apply this at our work, when people start to come across a Facebook post or a podcast or anything like that. That as people make those connections, I think that's when we'll start to see more natural implementation of the behavioral sciences in organizations. I think specific to OBM, we don't have, people don't have that understanding. So when people are looking for growth and change in their organization, they might look at HR positions, but they're not going to go to LinkedIn or Indeed and search for OBM specialist. Like no one knows what OBM is comparatively to these other larger fields like HR or industrial and organizational psychology is another big one. And so OBM is just so small still. My hope is that as we see progress through the research, that will be picked up more and more, and we'll see more opportunities for OBM applications in all industries because it's behaviorally based and we know very well how to change behavior.
I truly hope for the same thing because, you know, whenever I hear about OBM, I feel like it's so small, it's so niche. And so it's really nice to be able to hear a lot more about OBM because when we think ABA, we immediately, again, I'm going to say this again, we immediately go to the medical model and the subsets are not looked at nearly as often. And so for us to have this conversation about OBM tonight is really just so impactful for me as a BCBA because there's more out there. There's more out there, children, you know, like that's what I want to like get at the takeaway is that there's a lot more out there than just doing your medical model. You know, you can do ABA in a variety of domains. It's not just about medical model.
Yeah. And that's something I absolutely love and is extremely exciting about what we do is something that I really like to learn about and explore is values and motivation. And so that is something that within values and motivation, those things change over time. So right now I'm extremely passionate about OBM. I never see that stopping, but 10, 15 years from now, being a behavior analyst is something that if there's human behavior, I can work with that. So I do enjoy sports. I do enjoy nutrition. Those are not things I've ever applied a behavior analytic lens to professionally with other people. I do it in my own life, sure. But I would love to explore that over time, whether that's in my business and I set something up within that, or I just explore that personally. And so I think that that's what's so fascinating about what we do, is knowing that our values, our motivations, and our passions change over time. We are in a role and we have a knowledge base to be able to apply what we do in any of that. And so we don't have to be pigeonholed in clinical ABA. I think that it's such a great thing to do. I love the background that we have in ABA. We've had some bumps in the road historically, but I love the direction that we're going. And I think that clinical ABA and that medical model is absolutely phenomenal and so needed. But it doesn't mean that we need to be thinking in those terms that this is all I can do as a BCBA. I do think currently, if you want to branch out from that, probably the biggest option is start your own business. I think it's daunting to a lot of people, but there are so many resources out there. There's so many supports. If anyone wants to do that, reach out to me. I would love to collaborate on that. But that is something that once we get out of that mindset or expand that vision that I can do whatever I want with behavior analysis, there is so much that's just so liberating. And so it's just, I can work within my direct passions. And I think for any individual with whatever your passion is, that is so empowering.
I love that. That's absolutely true. There's so much freedom if we can, you know, truly make it that way. So just really, really awesome stuff. So Jake, I really appreciate the time that we spent together talking about OBM. Super excited to have had you on. Tell us where we can find you. Tell us where we can find Avenue Behavior Consulting, and how can we get in contact with you?
The best ways to find me, you can find me on LinkedIn. I have had times where they'll search my name and it doesn't come up because we don't have enough connections or whatever it might be. Jake Watson on LinkedIn, if you can find me. If you want to go to our website, avenuebehavior.com, you can fill out one of the contact forms that we have. I see those directly. You can also reach out to me directly through email. That's Jake, J-A-K-E, at avenuebehavior.com. Email is a very great way to directly contact me. I will respond to that. I would love to connect with anyone who's listening. And of course, Michelle, keep in contact and let's keep chatting. Let's keep collaborating over time.
I love that. And I 100% am down to do that. Thank you so much again, Jake. I really appreciate your time being on here. And thank you everyone for taking a listen at tonight's episode. I really hope that you got as much amazing information and got the same kind of impact and joy that I got out of recording this episode. So that being said, I've been your host, Michelle Zeman, and I will see you on the next one. Bye.
Bye.